Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The first order of business in addressing the unsustainable spending here in Washington and the looming debt crisis that hangs heavy over our country is the unchecked growth of waste, fraud, and abuse in our nation's entitlement program.
At a recent House Budget Committee hearing on rooting out waste and fraud, the chairman from Texas, Representative Jody Arrington.
This should be a nonpartisan, bipartisan issue. Like, we need to rein in spending. We ought to all agree with this category of wasteful spending. It's money taken from taxpayers and spent in ways that not only violate the laws, but common sense, while also undermining the promises made to the most vulnerable Americans.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
U.S. and Chinese officials signing a new trade agreement following weeks of negotiation, including earlier discussions in London. Deal finalized at an event at the White House on Thursday night. Now, under the agreement, China will begin shipments of rare earth minerals to the U.S. In exchange, U.S. will lift certain trade countermeasures once those shipments begin. Now, while ag not specifically addressed in the agreement, officials from both countries say they plan to remain in close contact, U.S. negotiators emphasizing they're maintaining open communication with China. It's essential, particularly on issues like biotechnology approvals, sanitary and phytosanitary standards, and the future ag trade policy. Rare earth minerals used in a wide range of technologies, from smartphones and wind turbines to tractors and precision ag equipment. China currently supplies more than 70% of the world's rare earth elements. As wildfire risks continue to grow across the country, lawmakers pressing federal agencies to modernize how prescribed burns are managed. During a hearing in the U.S. House of Representatives last week, members questioned why the U.S. Forest Service hasn't made broader use of infrared technology to detect hotspots in real time. Infrared tools already used in some wildfire zones, but coverage inconsistent, often not available during controlled burns. Federal officials acknowledge the concern, saying emerging tools like thermal sensors and unmanned aerial systems could help reduce the risk of fires escaping containment lines. They also pointed to ongoing pilot programs aimed at integrating newer technologies into land management plans. Prescribed burns remain an important part of wildlife and wildfire prevention, especially in areas where overgrown vegetation creates dangerous fuel loads. The House Appropriations Committee passing its draft of the Ag Spending Bill for 2026, vote 35-27. The bill sets discretionary funding at $25.5 billion. It's a decrease of 4.2% compared to current year levels. Committee leaders say their reduction is part of a broader push to refocus federal programs on core responsibilities while cutting what they view as unnecessary spending. Several Biden-era initiatives, including the Rural Partners Network, USDA Climate Hubs, American Climate Corps, and the Office of Urban Ag, receive no funding in the bill. At the same time, legislation does continue to support key rural and ag-focused efforts, including investments in ag research, rural broadband expansion, food safety, and inspection services. USDA releasing their monthly ag prices report for May. Overall prices received index up 1.7% from April, 13% higher than the same month a year ago. Crop production index rose 2.3% month over month, still 0.9% lower than May of last year. In the meantime, livestock production index climbed 1.4% from April, showing a strong year-over-year gain, up 20% from last year. USDA does report producers received higher prices in May for cattle, hogs, oranges, and milk, but lower prices for market eggs, lettuce, strawberry, and broilers. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name is Brian Blaze, and I am the president of Paragon Health Institute. Our nation's future depends on reforming federal health programs.
Blaze testifying recently before the House Budget Committee on rooting out waste and fraud.
Over the past 4 years, Biden administration policies placed our nation on an unsustainable fiscal path. In Medicaid and Obamacare, the Biden administration prioritized enrollment at any cost, diverting resources from the most vulnerable, enabling fraud, and shifting significant Medicaid costs from states to Washington. Today, the federal government covers 75% of Medicaid spending, far above the historic 60% share. Incentives matter. Biden-era incentives led to massive federal spending with little health benefit. CBO projects $1.9 trillion more spending on Medicaid and Obamacare over the next decade than it forecast at the start of the Biden administration. I will address three major problems. First, massive improper enrollment. Paragon research shows 6.4 million people enrolled in fully subsidized Obamacare plans who do not qualify. As a pandemic measure, President Biden signed legislation that expanded subsidies, making coverage fully subsidized for people with income between 100 and 150% of the poverty line. The Biden administration curtailed eligibility verification and disregarded mounting evidence of improper enrollment. Large fraud rings emerged that misled applicants with free perks, coached income misstatements, and profited from commissions, while insurers reaped windfall profits. A recent Bloomberg News expose quotes agents saying half of enrollees had no idea they were signing up. One broker said, quote, "You have to throw away a little bit of your morality," end quote. Improper exchange enrollment will cost the government nearly $30 billion this year. Automatic re-enrollment perpetuates improper enrollment. Nearly half of current exchange enrollees took no action during open enrollment and were simply auto-re-enrolled. Fraud led to plans being switched and canceled without enrollees' knowledge. Millions have other coverage or don't know they're enrolled. On Medicaid, the Biden administration extended the COVID public health emergency, leaving nearly 20 million ineligible people on Medicaid. The administration then made it harder for states to remove ineligible recipients. Second, program incentives divert resources from the most vulnerable. On average, states receive 7 times more federal funding per state dollar spent on able-bodied expansion adults than children, pregnant women, the disabled, and seniors. Expansion states have strong incentives to classify enrollees under the expansion and focus resources on able-bodied adults. Bad incentives have led improper federal Medicaid payments to total $1.1 trillion over the last decade. Third, states are increasingly using legalized Medicaid money laundering tactics to pay commercial rates and shift costs to the federal government. Medicaid money laundering, where states tax hospitals, recycle funds back, and claim federal reimbursement, exploded during the Biden administration. The Biden administration issued a rule that states could make Medicaid payments through insurers up to average commercial rates. Commercial hospital rates are nearly triple Medicare rates, so Medicaid now often pays much more than Medicare. This threatens seniors' access and leads providers to prioritize Medicaid over Medicare. These inflated Medicaid payments quadrupled under the Biden administration.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Wheat harvest this season has been slower than average, let's put it this way, right? And there's a few reasons for that. And how slow are we this year?
Kansas State wheat production specialist is Romulo Lolato, looking at wheat harvest in 2025.
Well, if you think of an early USDA report that came out just this week, they reported that wheat harvest progress in Kansas was about 20%. This year. And if we compare this to last year, during this same report in the same time of the year, we were 49% done. So this is like a very considerable slow in the pace of the wheat harvest. Now, of course, last year we harvested it fairly quick, right? Because of the conditions were good for harvest. But really, if we think of historically, we're supposed to be 30 to 40% harvested by this time of the year. And we're still halfway, right? And so we are definitely much slower than where we should have been. And there's really a couple of reasons for that slowness. One of them is simply we started later than usual, right? I mean, it's not uncommon for us to see the first few wheat fields in Kansas be harvested in that late few days of May and early first days of June, especially in that Barber County region, south central, southwest Kansas transition. However, this year, the first few reports that we were hearing about were about June 9th or so. So we were probably a full, at least about 10 days or so behind where we usually are, simply getting started. And then since we started there on June 9th, in the last couple of weeks here until today, there was a lot of rainfall that slowed down the harvest of the wheat crop. Actually, if we look statewide, accumulation of rainfall during these last 2 weeks, it ranged from, you know, a couple of counties in the west central part of the state. They didn't get much rain, but really the majority of the state got anywhere from an inch all the way to 7 or 8 inches of rainfall. If you think of that McPherson region and the McPherson County and Rice County, parts of those counties, again, they got up to 7 or 8 inches of rainfall. So a lot of rain out there that definitely has also slowed down harvest progress.
Of course, with the late season moisture, conditions exist for an increase in weeds and disease.
So did you think that at this point in time, the wheat crop is not necessarily taking any more water? So any water that is out there available, it would be used by those growing weeds. So really no competition for those resources out there. And so all of this water really makes it for a really good, and those warm temperatures that we're having really make it for excellent conditions for weed emergence and weed development in that wheat canopy. Now, if the wheat canopy is very dense, you know, in high yielding conditions where that underneath the canopy is extremely, has a lot of shade into it, that can hold back the development of those weeds some. However, in this year, you might remember that we had quite a bit of a wheat streak mosaic around the state, and that has limited the yield potential of many of these fields. And with that limited yield potential, there's also a much smaller canopy, and that smaller canopy makes for a better environment for those weeds to grow. So we might be in a situation where we have a small canopy with a limited yield potential with lots of weeds coming up. So there are pre-harvest herbicide options, right? And we do have an update on that as well. When selecting those herbicides, it's important to keep in mind that they will have pre-harvest intervals, right? So some of them are 3 all the way to 10 or plus days that you need to wait until you're able to harvest the crop. So that's one thing to keep in mind when making that the herbicide selection.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Today we are releasing a 5-point plan to combat the new world screwworm.
Speaking last week in South Texas, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
We have defeated the screwworm before and we will do it again, but it's really important, and that's why I'm here today to announce a couple of things. That we are first enhancing the international sterile fly production and investing $21 million in the renovation of an existing fly production facility in southern Mexico. Number two, we are protecting our border at all costs. All of you know this better than anywhere in the country. We have closed the southern border to live animal imports temporarily until the right measures are put in place, and we have every confidence that our cattle producers and that our industry here is protected. Number three, we are maximizing our readiness by partnering with state animal health officials to update and finalize emergency management plans and preparing to stockpile therapeutics to support the needs of our ranchers as they arise. Fourth, we are fighting the screwworm domestically. Today, announcing plans for a sterile fly dispersal facility right here at Moore Air Base in Hidalgo County. And finally, number five, we are investing in innovative research to develop novel treatments, preventatives, and response strategies. This prong of the strategy will involve researchers at USDA's Agricultural Research Service and our great land-grant universities in Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico, exploring the development of better traps, better lures, local training, surveillance validation, and much more. Again, it is such a privilege to be here with all my friends in McAllen who are right on the forefront of the fight for America's livestock industry and for American consumers.
From closing borders to closing loopholes, Representative Jody Arrington of Texas is chairman of the House Budget Committee.
Just as important, the House One Pass Big Beautiful Bill restores the dignity of work itself, a moral imperative for humanity, I think we would all agree, but also essential for prosperity in this country. Able-bodied adults without dependents will be required to work or volunteer, pursue education, or train for at least 80 hours per month, with, of course, common sense exemptions. These are programs and policies that President Biden supported and Bill Clinton himself signed. That equates to less than a part-time job and reflects a basic belief that public assistance should serve as a bridge to self-sufficiency and not as a long-term substitute for work. The House passed reforms to SNAP will close all the loopholes that have allowed states, including California, Illinois, Nevada, and Washington, D.C., to completely waive their work requirements. In California, there is no able-bodied person who is on SNAP who's required to work among these other states. So we need to end the accounting gimmicks, close the loopholes, encourage work and self-sufficiency, and ensure benefits go to those Americans who truly need them. This will generate nearly $300 billion in savings, by the way, without taking a single penny from eligible Americans. On our current trajectory, our debt will reach $150 trillion by 2025. By any measure, this is unsustainable. I think this, both sides would agree. Interest payments on the debt crowd out other federal spending, making it impossible to respond to the challenges that future generations of Americans will face. The One Big Beautiful Bill takes a meaningful first step to right-size our bloated bureaucracy by reining in reckless spending, rooting out this waste and fraud, and the abuse that's driving our nation deeper into debt. That's why it's crucial that my Senate colleagues only consider changes that will go further to advance fiscal reforms.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Medicaid's ballooning enrollment has left the most vulnerable behind.
Nick Still is Vice President of Communications at the Foundation for Government Accountability at a recent House Budget Committee hearing.
Across the nation, more than 700,000 individuals, most of whom have intellectual or developmental disabilities, are stuck on Medicaid waiting lists for needed home and community-based services. The average wait time for these services can last nearly 16 years in some states. As you might imagine, many don't have that long to wait. Remember, every dollar that goes to an able-bodied adult on Medicaid who can and should be working is a dollar that doesn't go to the people the program was intended to help. These aren't just numbers on a sheet of paper. These are real people, including kids with intellectual or developmental disabilities. Real people like my son Luke, who is here for today's hearing. Luke has severe autism and epilepsy. Though he probably had his first seizures in the womb, the first seizure we saw was at just 7 weeks. I held my tiny newborn son as he seized. It took my wife Leanne and me taking him to multiple hospitals before someone finally believed us. 16 years later, we finally learned why. A rare gene mutation linked to profound intellectual disability and intractable epilepsy. Luke is a sweet and happy young man. He enjoys video games, Star Wars, hunting for diamonds with his grandparents at Crater of Diamonds State Park in Arkansas, and fiercely loves his siblings, Peter, Joel, and Isabel, who are also here with us today. A couple of years ago, we sought out help through the Home and Community-Based Services waiver so that he can get the critical Medicaid services he needs to help him be a part of the community and so that he can receive in-home care when my wife and I can't be there. At the time, we were told that the average wait for someone like him was 11 years. He becomes an adult in a little over 200 days. At this point, we don't know when he'll ever move off that list. It's easy to talk about Medicaid reform. It's another thing entirely to live it. I see firsthand how able-bodied adults, 62% of whom do not work, are siphoning away resources that can and should go to fund services for our most vulnerable. These groups move to the front of the line while kids like Luke wait years for the services they urgently need. It's not easy to talk about these things in front of the whole world. It's painful. And the truth of the matter is that our family is going to be okay. Luke has two parents who adore him. He has three siblings who love him as well. And he has grandparents, all four, who live nearby and are there to help at the drop of a hat. So why am I here? Because my family story is not unique. It's the story of people in our community and thousands of others across the country who don't have the voice or the resources, financial, family, or otherwise. Imagine being a single mom to a son with autism and epilepsy. You're working hard, trying to keep a roof over your head, and you're told, as we were, that help is coming in 11 years. Meanwhile, your state is spending hundreds of millions of dollars on able-bodied adults who move to the front of the line, ahead of your child. This kind of help may be the only thing keeping your child from being institutionalized. But waiver services are out of reach, while those who could be working don't have to lift a finger. Does that sound right to anyone in this room?
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Definitely one of the things that we're concerned with all this rain, once the wheat crop is ready to be harvested, is anything that could reduce our yields.
Kansas State Wheat Production Specialist Romilo Lolapo.
Right, and then there's a number of factors that could actually lead to yield reduction on the wheat crop on this time. One of them, because of all that water that we were having, is water logging issues. Typically, we are concerned with water logging more during the crop development, active crop development, right? Because all that water will create anaerobic conditions in the soil, and wheat can't really handle too long, you know, at soils like that. So if this was happening, you know, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, we would be concerned with just crop death due to anaerobic conditions and water logging. And that happened this year in parts of central Kansas around Salina and in a little bit further west towards Dighton as well. I was in a few wheat fields that were showing quite a bit of water logging issues there. Now, late season water logging like these, they will actually delay progress of harvest because of this very, very wet soils that growers cannot drive on top, and also can increase the incidence of saprophytic fungi there. Other reason that could lead to yield losses here is lodging. There has been a lot of lodged wheat out there this year because of all of these rains. Now, just like water logging, right, we would be concerned with yield reduction due to lodging more if this lodging had happened a few weeks ago. So the earlier the lodging happens, the more yield loss we typically see from that lodging, right? Because it can disrupt translocation of those sugars going to the grain, or it can create a microclimate with more diseases. Early this year, right, or more when this lodging is occurring, when the wheat is almost mature and ready to be harvested, right, again, it can really create difficulties in harvesting the crop. And so harvesting lodged wheat is not fun at all. It slows down the process. It increases a lot the amount of losses that we are having at that harvest itself, right? And so there are many reasons why lodging can actually reduce grain yield of the wheat crop there. So that's definitely one of the concerns as well. Now, associated with all of that, there's also the concern of grain shattering, right? We're actually seeing a lot of that this year. Now, there's a couple of reasons here for all the grain shattering that we're seeing this year. One of them, we had cool and moist conditions during grain feeding, and that created the opportunity for some pretty nice large kernels out there. And if a variety is more prone for shattering, we started seeing really 3 or 4 weeks ago where some of those glumes were opened up. So the glume is that structure that holds the wheat kernel, right, in the head. And they were already opened up, and that's a big risk for grain shattering right there. If, you know, in the middle of the grain feeding period, you are already being able to see the grains in the head because the glume is open. So we were seeing quite a bit of that already earlier this month before the wheat was even ready to harvest. And whenever these rains come by, they will get those kernels wet. Those kernels will increase in volume, and that will tend to open up those glooms even further, right? And so it can really, really increase the chances of losing all that grain. The grain's just going to fall down in the ground. Of course, there's differences in varieties and how they handle that. We kind of call that characteristics of wheat varieties. We call it gloom tenacity, right? And so some varieties that are able to hang into the grain better as the grain is drying down, they will be more valuable in this situation. Although we could hear concerns from growers in terms of varieties that are too hard to thresh, right? Which is the other way of this. But again, in a year like this, those varieties that are very hard to thresh, they can be valuable in making sure that we're not seeing that shattering go on. So again, grain shattering has been very prevalent this year. And that was a combination of all of these rains that we had, again, opening up those glooms a little bit more with very, very high winds. These storms, they came with a lot of wind as well. And that definitely did not help in terms of maintaining wheat kernels in the heads.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The annual Farm Service Agency County Committee election cycle is now underway, with nominations for positions being accepted.
All nomination forms must be postmarked or received in the local FSA office by August 1st of this year.
FSA Administrator Bill Beam adds for nominating candidates, eligible producers within local service areas.
We encourage you to consider running for your local county committee, or maybe nominate another producer to improve outreach and communication. Ensure producers in your community are best being served by USDA.
More details about county committee nominations, eligibility requirements, and the election process are available through local FSA offices or online at www.fsa.usda.gov/elections. Candidates elected later this fall will be sworn in on January 1st. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.